This is VOA News by a remote. I'm Michael Brown. President Donald Trump said the United States is going to put a very powerful hold on money it sends to the World Health Organization. Trump is blaming the United Nations humanitarian arm of missing the onslaught of the COVID-19 pandemic. The United States is the largest contributor to the WHO. Meanwhile, President Trump is brushing off reports about his administration's internal early warning that the new coronavirus could cost the U.S. economy trillions of dollars and kill on a massive scale. Trump's trade advisor, Pete Navarro, sounded an initial alarm in late January when there were already confirmed cases of COVID-19 in more than a dozen countries, with a memo to the National Security Council. Trump said he didn't see the memo, describing it, though, as a recommendation. The U.S. has recorded more than 11,000 deaths from the virus, with more than 378,000 confirmed cases. New York State saw its largest single-day death toll from the coronavirus on Tuesday, even as admissions to hospitals are beginning to level off. Governor Andrew Cuomo told reporters that 731 residents had died from the virus in the past 24 hours, raising the statewide death toll to 5,489. And Arizona Governor Doug Ducey issued an executive order requiring people flying into Arizona from New York, Connecticut, or New Jersey to self-quarantine for 14 days. The State Health Department will work with airlines to identify and notify affected travelers, and police across the state will help with enforcement. So far, Arizona has 2,500 coronavirus cases, and 73 people have died from the virus. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. The Midwestern U.S. state of Wisconsin voted Tuesday in a Democratic presidential primary. The state Supreme Court reinstated after the governor had postponed it because of the safety concerns over the coronavirus pandemic. More than a dozen U.S. states have postponed Democratic presidential primaries in April and May. Between former Vice President Joe Biden and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders until weeks from now, in hopes that by then, the effects of the virus will have dissipated enough to allow voters to show up at polling places to cast ballots without endangering their health. China's Health Commission said Wednesday the Chinese mainland reported 62 new confirmed COVID-19 cases on Tuesday, of which 59 were imported. The commission said no new cases was reported on the day in Hubei province. The province saw 69 patients newly discharged from hospitals after recovery, all in Wuhan. It reported one new death in Wuhan. And speaking of Wuhan, life is slowly returning to some normality. On Wednesday, after the Chinese authorities lifted the 11-week lockdown, allowing residents to once again travel in and out of the city where the coronavirus pandemic began. Wuhan's 11 million residents are now permitted to leave without special permission as long as a mandatory smartphone application powered by a mix of data tracking and government surveillance shows they are healthy and have not been in recent contact with anyone confirmed to have the virus. The Afghan Taliban says they will now approach the Americans to resolve the prisoner release issue after telling its technical team in Kabul to stop participating in what they call fruitless meetings with representatives of Afghan government. The release of 5,000 Taliban prisoners was among the promises and the landmark agreement signed between the U.S. and the Taliban back in February. And Cardinal George Pell is a free man Wednesday, again, after Australia's highest court cleared him of sex child crimes on Tuesday and said his trial had not been a referendum on the Catholic Church handling of the clergy abuse crisis. Pell, who was Pope Francis' former finance minister, had been the most senior Catholic found guilty of sexually abusing children and has been 13 months in prison before a panel of judges dismissed his convictions. For more news, join us at voanews.com. This is VOA News by remote. I'm Michael Brown.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, April 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria says it did not invite Chinese doctors to help fight the coronavirus.
The Chinese doctors are not coming here to treat Nigerian patients. They are coming here primarily to advise. They are coming here to install and supervise the installation of the equipment.
Lal Mohammed is Nigeria's information minister. Kenya wants to use $20 million recovered from corruption to help those impacted by coronavirus. Refugees defy COVID-19 safety measures in Uganda. Health workers in South Africa are threatening to take their government to court. Rwanda begins a week-long 26th commemoration of the country's 1994 genocide.
This was really a terrible moment that we need to tell our children, but we need to look ahead. What Rwanda do we want? A Rwanda which has rendered justice to the victim, but that promoted reconciliation.
Oliver Onduhungirehe is state minister in the Rwanda Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And Zimbabwe's government authorizes traditional herbalists to treat coronavirus patients. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigerian government says it did not invite Chinese doctors to come to Nigeria and train Nigerian doctors in fighting the coronavirus. There have been reports that the Nigerian government invited 18 Chinese doctors to assist local health professionals in the fight against coronavirus. The Nigerian Medical Association said Tuesday that it was against such move. The minority caucus of the Nigerian House of Representatives also reportedly asked the federal government to scrap the invitation because it said the importation of Chinese doctors into Nigeria would be against the national interest of the country. But Information Minister Lal Mohammed said a major Chinese company doing business in Nigeria had offered to bring its equipment and personnel to Nigeria to assist in the fight against the coronavirus.
I can say categorically that the Nigerian government never invited the Chinese doctors to come and help with the coronavirus. What actually happened is that the CCEC, which is one of the major Chinese companies doing business in Nigeria, offered that they were going to help Nigeria. They will be coming with about 256 items and equipment to help Nigeria combat the COVID-19.
According to the president of the Medical Association of Nigeria, bringing in the Chinese doctors is an embarrassment to the government and to Nigerian doctors who, he said, are doing their best every day to deal with the pandemic.
Clearly, the president of the Nigerian Medical Association, he is not quite well informed about the whole saga. In the first instance, the Chinese doctors who are accompanying the medical equipment are purely technical people who are coming to install the equipment. Secondly, we do not even see how Chinese doctors can come and treat Nigerians who are suffering from the coronavirus. They are not here to go to our clinic or to go to our isolation center or ICU. They are here primarily to train our people, help build capacity, and at the same time supervise the installment and the running of the machines.
What is the latest on the coronavirus in Nigeria, and what's the likelihood that President Buhari may extend the lockdown?
As to whether Mr. President is going to extend the lockdown, well, that would depend on our assessment of the situation at the end of this lockdown. If, for instance, we are encouraged by the comportment and by the results and by the number of testing we're able to do, and people are actually very serious about social distancing, they take seriously the issue of personal hygiene, washing your hands and things like that.
Back to the Chinese doctors. Even the minority caucus of the Nigerian House of Representatives has said that the importation of Chinese doctors into Nigeria will be against the national interest of Nigeria. Your reaction?
Like I explained, the Chinese doctors are not coming here to treat Nigerian patients. They are coming here primarily to advise. They are coming here to build capacity. They are coming here to train. They are coming here to share their experience with us. They are coming here to install and supervise installation of the equipment. Therefore, we do not see anything that is going to be embarrassing to the country in any form. This is a pandemic, and everywhere in the world, medical opinions have been exchanged, donations are being made. Even the most powerful countries in the world today are receiving donations and receiving equipment. I think all these things actually came from a poor understanding of what the Chinese are coming to do.
Lau Mohammed is Nigeria's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Abuja. Kenya's national treasury says about $20 million it had recovered from corrupt Kenyans will be used to cushion needy households in urban areas from economic shock following reduced activity in the wake of coronavirus. The government said it has already approved over $400 million, most of it drawn from national and county governments, including from cutting international and domestic travels. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
President Uhuru Kenyatta has made it clear as to why he did not lock down the entire country, saying that the move he took was in the interest of the public. Kenyatta says locking the country would mean the government has to feed some Kenyans who are vulnerable in the society. Speaking yesterday, Tuesday, while implementing President Kenyatta's directive of having funds set aside to cater for a population of Kenyans in slums, Treasury Cabinet Secretary Ukur Yatani said that the COVID-19 pandemic has affected the economy and the growth projection of the country will drop drastically.
The net import of the incentives will result in 272 billion revenue loss for Kenya per year. So if you are looking at 3 months, then you are looking at a figure of about 60 billion. How are we going to mitigate this? We are also now going to reallocate funds from travels, funds from some development projects so that we can now manage. And you know, moving forward, it's clear that our revenue streams are going to shrink. And undoubtedly also, it's not only for Kenya, but all over the world, growth projections have been revised downwards.
Among the funds are $20 million from the Department of Public Prosecution, money seized from corrupt politicians and individuals in Kenya. According to the Director of Public Prosecution, Nurdin Haji, his department is yet to collect more money after the corruption cases are cleared by the judiciary.
So we have allocated 2 billion shillings to the COVID emergency funds, and these are proceeds from corruption that were recovered by us. We had in various institutions that deal with the issues of corruption money, but most of the money are not yet released to us because the cases are not complete, and therefore we could only give Kenya shillings 2 billion to the COVID emergency fund.
Talib Mbarak, Chief Executive Officer, Kenya's Ethics and Anti-Corruption Commission, says the commission will work hand in hand to ensure more money is recovered from corrupt individuals to help vulnerable Kenyans during this time of the pandemic.
We are seeing the product of the multi-agency team, and we believe that we shall be working hand in hand to support each other so that this war against corruption still continues and bear fruits to the public. We are happy that this $2 billion today is going to help the needy people who have been affected by this pandemic.
In a press briefing yesterday, Tuesday, Kenya's Health Cabinet Secretary Mutahi Kagwe said that 16 more people have been infected, bringing the number of COVID-19 positive cases to 172.
We will not hesitate to take even bolder measures in the coming days. The virus is already here with us, and we cannot run away from it. And we have embarked with it a chasing game. Should we allow this to happen, it will be very, very difficult for us to catch up with it.
The counties of Mombasa, Kwale and Kilifi at the coastal region of Kenya will implement the ban not to move in and out today, Wednesday at 7 p.m. Kenyan time. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
As South Africa intensifies its fight against COVID-19 amid rising numbers of people testing positive for the coronavirus, another fight is brewing that could leave citizens more exposed. As the number of COVID-19 patients nears 1,700, health workers are threatening to down tools and take the government to court for failing to provide them with adequate protective clothing. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The National Education, Health and Allied Workers Union, NEHAWU, says if no personal protective equipment, PEE, is given within a reasonable period, workers will not come to work. The court action follows revelations that up to 16 health workers have contracted COVID-19 in the course of their duty. Kaya Kaba is the spokesperson of the workers' union.
It's important then for government to ensure that our workers are given protective clothing so that they are not exposed to the virus, so that our workers are also given that extra little training that is needed in order to deal with the virus. But over and above that, if then they're expected to go beyond the normal hours and they work overtime, then they should be remunerated for that as well.
Richie Sikwina is a nurse in one of South Africa's public hospitals. He says health workers put their lives at risk every day because the government has failed to protect them.
We are talking about gloves, we are talking about masks, N95 masks, and also disposable gowns. We're talking about sterile gloves, boots. We're talking about something that is going to cover your shoes so that no part of your skin will be exposed when you are nursing these patients. At the moment, we don't have such.
He says they are now faced with no option but to keep safe until the government is ready to protect them.
We are left with no choice because we've been shouting PPE. We've been shouting protection. We've been shouting protection of frontline staff. The only solution that we are left with now is to withdraw our services. We are not going to nurse a patient who is a suspect because that simply means we'll be throwing ourselves into the deep end of death.
Labor law expert Sherisa Raja says the government has a legal duty to ensure its employees are protected.
The Occupational Health and Safety Act puts a positive duty on employers to take all steps that are, it says, reasonably practicable to ensure the health and safety of its employees. Now, as an employee, I have the right not to tender service in a way that you may request, and I have a protection against victimization if I feel that you don't have my health and safety at the forefront of your operation.
The Minister of Labour, Tulas Ngesi, acknowledges the government is having challenges in supplying the personal protective equipment.
We must accept that the issue of the demand of these PPEs and all other necessary material, the demand is too high and the supplies are struggling internationally and even locally. It's clear that we are struggling, but we think that the government is trying by all means to produce more of the needed equipment.
The Department of Health has said it is doing all what it can to ensure that health workers are fully protected from the coronavirus. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butter in Washington. Today is Wednesday, April 8th. Ugandan authorities say refugees are defying safety measures set up to control the spread of COVID-19. Uganda has at least 52 confirmed COVID-19 cases and is currently under a lockdown that saw the government suspend admission of new refugees for a month. Now, authorities say they are going to discuss new ways to enforce the restrictions. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
Authorities in Uganda are finding it difficult to get residents of refugee settlements to adhere to safety measures meant to control the spread of COVID-19. To date, Uganda has recorded fewer than 100 confirmed COVID-19 cases. To keep the number down, last month, President Yoweri Museveni closed all borders and suspended movement of refugees into the country. Titus Dogo is the Adjumani Regional Refugee Desk Officer. He tells VOA via WhatsApp that while authorities have managed to halt movement through both official border posts and informal crossings, the internal movement of refugees remains a challenge.
They are now on cash. So they receive cash, and they have to run to the market to buy what, to buy food. We also have issues of internal settlement movement. We have tried to talk to them, but they continue moving, going to relatives, checking on this and this. And of course, we still have border cyclists. People there in the refugee settlements, they have not heeded to these instructions.
Jogo says they've stepped up measures to ensure refugees know how to prevent the spread of the virus.
We have translated them in the most commonly used languages among the South Sudanese. We have engaged public address systems. We have engaged people on borders with recorded support messages on COVID-19.
Uganda is host to more than 1.4 million refugees, the largest such population in Africa. 13 districts in Uganda host refugees from countries such as South Sudan, Democratic Republic of Congo, Burundi, Somalia, Rwanda, and Kenya. Uganda's State Minister for Disaster Preparedness, Musa Echweru, says the refugees may need some extra persuasion to accept the restrictions.
Our people come from countries where they have not been governments. So to submit to authority takes time. I'm going to discuss with the High Commissioner today. We want to send a team to go and make sure that they are talked to and then the enforcement starts.
But if there is an outbreak in refugee areas, says Echweru, the government has prepared the isolation centers that were set up earlier to handle potential Ebola outbreaks. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
Zimbabwe's government has authorized traditional herbalists to treat coronavirus patients. Health experts are very skeptical and are urging extreme caution. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Zimbabwe's Minister of Health delivered a letter Monday to the head of the country's main COVID-19 treatment center in Harare, asking him to consider using a herbalist who has questionable claims to have a cure for the virus. Speaking via WhatsApp, Dr. Nika Mahashi, the president of Zimbabwe College of Public Health Physicians, said the coronavirus was still evolving and its mortality were still fairly high.
We cannot take a chance with traditional medicine that is not proven. Even on the regular medicines that we have, none of them have been proven to be effective in treatment or cure of COVID-19. So this is an unwelcome development. And like I said initially, I'm hoping that this is not a true approval. You know, something went wrong somewhere, and the ministry urgently addresses this.
Mahaji said the government should instead stick to WHO guidelines on how to contain the virus, which so far has impacted 10 people who tested positive in Zimbabwe, killing one. But Tribet Shishanyu, the president of Zimbabwe Traditional Practitioners Association, said his organization was happy that President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government is allowing herbalists to treat coronavirus-positive Zimbabweans.
Traditional medicine practice is older and wider than science, and it is well accepted by the majority of Zimbabweans. If modern scientists are given opportunities to try whenever there is an emergency disease, why can't we do the same to traditional medicine practice? We are treating symptoms related to COVID-19, so by any chance, we may get a chance to treat the COVID-19.
He adds that traditional practitioners are consulting with spirit mediums in hopes of finding new COVID-19 treatments. Fortune Nyamande, chairman of the Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights, said using herbs may derail the gains that came with the nationwide 21-day lockdown, which ends next week.
We also wish to just highlight that those who are going to use this approach also needs to be aware of how to make use of protective personal equipment, because they may end up getting infected by the virus, and they may end up being agents of transmission to the broader communities. So by and large, you would say this needs to be really treated with caution. We always advocate for interventions which are grounded in science, that are grounded in evidence, and that have been shown to work elsewhere.
Minister of Health Tuesday refused to comment on the matter but confirmed the authenticity of the letter authorizing herbalists to treat Zimbabweans affected by the coronavirus. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Rwanda Tuesday began a week-long 26th commemoration of the country's 1994 genocide when members of the Hutu ethnic majority murdered as many as 800,000 people, mostly Tutsi minority. President Paul Kagame, in a speech, said his government will continue to educate generations of Rwandans about what happened and what the country has learned from it. He said Rwandans have learned the importance of working together to build a better Rwanda. But human rights groups say those expressing opinions critical of the ruling RPF government face prosecution and lengthy prison sentences. Oliver Onduhungireri is the state minister in the Rwandan Ministry of Foreign Affairs. He says President Paul Kagame's government has promoted justice to genocide victims while at the same time promoting reconciliation in the country.
The commemoration of the genocide perpetrated against the Tutsi is extremely important in Rwanda. We have lost a million people in just 100 days. 10,000 people killed every day for 100 days. And this genocide was not committed by an army or by a militia. The genocide was committed by neighbors, by family members, by teachers killed their students and vice versa. We had doctors who killed their patients and vice versa. So this was really a terrible moment that we need to tell our children and perpetuate this memory. But we need to look ahead. What Rwanda do we want? This is the Rwanda actually we have been building for the past 26 years. A Rwanda which has rendered justice to the victim, but that promoted reconciliation.
How was Genocide Commemoration Day observed during this era of coronavirus?
This 26th commemoration took place in a different context, in a difficult time of COVID-19 outbreak with the restrictive measures that we took. So we had a light a commemorative event today at the Genocide Memorial in Gisozi with a few people, the leaders of our country who laid a wreath to pay tribute to the victims of the genocide.
President Paul Kagame said in a speech that the lessons of our history have united us. But one criticism I keep hearing from opposition in exile or opposition people in Rwanda is that there is a lack of political freedom in Rwanda. Your comment?
Today is a day of remembrance. We are commemorating our loved ones who were slaughtered during 100 days of horror. So I think this is not the time to talk about what the so-called opposition thinks.
The theme of this year's commemoration is a focus on the youth of Rwanda. Any message for the youth of Rwanda?
The genocide of 1994 against the Tutsi was perpetrated because there was a genocide ideology for at least 30 years before 1994. This is that ideology that was taught in schools with discrimination on job, and all of this led to the dehumanization of the Tutsi. It's that regime that led us to the genocide. So now we live in a different Rwanda where the ethnicity is no more at the center of our public life.
Oliver Onduhungirehe is the state minister in the Rwanda Ministry of Foreign Affairs. He was speaking with us from the capital, Kigali. That's it for this Wednesday, April 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
The voice Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 22:30 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.